If you are able to listen to a podcast, you have access to everything you could ever need. The problem is people get overwhelmed and people are like, I don't know where to start. That person's saying that thing. That person's saying something slightly different. Who do I listen to?
Yeah.
People get overwhelmed. So I would just say...
Bumblebee, bumblebee, bumblebee.
Welcome to the Immersed Podcast. We are your hosts, Alex O'Keefe and Dan Ramsden. We are also founders of Immersed Recovery, where we are building the home of recovery for everyday and world-class athletes.
We aim to immerse you in education via our guests, bring communities together, embrace positive change and help create solid habits that yield the path for our health and longevity.
Right, here we go.
Do you have like a ritual you do before your podcast?
I'm going to take my clothes off, spin around 3 times. Touch my toes.
Wait then. Don't tease me.
Yeah. No, not really. I just kind of do a few noises like that. And it just makes me feel awake. That's all it's doing really. It's just waking my face up and... Cash.
Yeah,
that one. That's all one, isn't it? Yeah. So, yeah, I just like to get the energy going.
Been looking forward to this one. Matt Hall. How are you doing, pal?
Really good. Honestly, it's great to be here. Obviously, you guys were at the event that we did in January, and I'm all for your mission. I know, obviously, Dan.
I know you quite well.
Yeah.
I think we might be related. Yeah,
that's where you were going to start.
I'm gonna throw a curveball in before we talk any further. So the conventional way to start this would be for Dan to introduce, you know, and do all that stuff. But yep. What I'm going to do is, because you two are cousins, you go way back. Matt, Dan, first I'm going to ask you to best describe Matt first, and then I'm going to go vice versa.
Yeah.
Matt, you describe Dan.
Let's do it.
Well,
Matt's identity is Dan's cousin.
Just dream to fame.
The younger, gobby little shit.
Family member.
What best describes Matt? Without getting too soppy.
Go.
Very intentional. Very deep. Very thoughtful. Passionate. Individual, good man, good soul, funny,
yeah,
can sometimes be a bit of a dick
as well. Get that in.
Yeah, we all are, aren't we?
Balance to be had.
Yeah.
At times annoying.
Yeah,
always right.
No, I'm not.
Well, there you go.
Ah, man, thank you.
But yeah, all around good guy,
yeah.
Good energy, and always strives for improving, which I like.
Beautiful. Love that.
I would say Dan is somebody who is so empathetic, caring, thoughtful. He's always got good intentions for everybody around him, and he's not the sort of person that he's just going to jump into something because he's like, oh, this is a good idea, let's go for it. He's always going to put a lot of thought into that and the impact that it's going to have on people around them. Obviously, from his background with losing his mum at such a young age, I would say you've become borderline obsessed with health. And in a positive obsession, generally, which is about really not just accepting what we're told and you know, that not being good enough for you. It's about how can I genuinely find the answers that we need to help as many people as possible. And for me, when I look back and, you know, when I started training with you, we were probably about 15, 16. It was just after your mum died, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I remember around that time you saying, look, if you want to get in, because we weren't actually that close when my auntie Trudy was alive. I was really close to Dan's mum, my auntie.
Yeah.
And it was like, because it was just that age difference, right? Where I was just a little kid and you was a teenager. And it can be hard to be close, yeah, I think. But then we became really close, you know, in the years after Trudy died through training. And for
you
me...
closes when you age anyway, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
When you're all adults.
Yeah, exactly.
Gap closes right down. But I sort of took you under my wing, I would say, yep. at first, putting you on the right path in terms of health and training.
And that,
and
that
became something that where we've just ended up helping each other through life, yeah. you know.
Mm.
We always hook up and help each other, give each other advice, chew the fat.
Yeah.
Think about things a bit more, do you know. I tell you, we'll come on to it later, but you had an opportunity to call a couple of people. We'll talk about it later, but
yeah.
you chose me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that means a lot to me, that.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it, you know, so just stuff like that, you know, we've got each other's back.
Yeah. And I see it is more like a brother relationship because we have been through a lot together. But what I've always got from Dan is integrity. Like yeah. through and through.
Yeah.
And that for me, I think, has been a real gift, because being younger and learning a lot of fitness and health knowledge through Dan, I think a lot of within the fitness industry, you can get a lot of PTs that are just like, eat your protein, lift higher, heavier. And it's kind of like, I watched you bench, bro. And it's yeah. all that kind of nonsense. And yeah. I think right from day one, and even though you've kept learning and kept, you know, things have changed, your opinions on things have changed, but from day one, you didn't just give the basic standard PT replies. You always thought above and beyond. So that's a big thing I'm really grateful to you for. And that when I think of you, it's, as I say, a critical thinker with really good intentions at the heart of him.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
All right, man. And I mean that, you know I do. So yeah, I'm not just bigging you up because I'm on your show.
Negatives.
Fucking boring as fuck when he talks. Jesus, how are you still listening to this podcast, guys?
Monster motherfucker.
But we laugh about that. We joke about that. And I think sometimes you can be stubborn. And sometimes and I can as well. So like this is a thing for both of us.
Well, we are Geminis.
We're Geminis. We've got the yin to the yang. I think sometimes Dan can be stubborn if he's been hurt. I think is a key one. If somebody's hurt him, it's not see red, but it's just that thing of, whoa, I've been hurt. I think where we differ is I'm always a lot more, yeah, but why have they hurt us? What's wrong with them to hurt us? And we'll chat about it, and we'll often have these chats and go, yeah, it's not a bad shout, really, actually. And it brings you round, doesn't it? I think yeah. that's something.
Momentarily.
And then you go, fuck them again, and then go back.
No. It's and again, it's always good to have that perspective and that relationship where yeah. we challenge each other as well.
Yeah,
not
we
just
do.
All the, you know, rubbing backs parades.
Nope.
Like we question each other and challenge each other, and that helps growth. So.
And that's, without going soppy myself, that's the highest level of love, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
If you're just going to, like, blow smoke up each other's arse, that's not love. Because love and true care is about what does that person need in this moment, what's going to actually help them.
Yeah.
And sometimes we all know you've got to be told some home truths, you've got to be challenged.
Yeah.
And I think we've absolutely got that in our relationship.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, there's a great way to start the chat, isn't it?
There you go.
Yeah. Bit of love, bit of home truths, yes. Yeah.
You've got yeah. many, many different hats that you wear.
I ain't got any on today.
No,
I've come capless.
In this world,
yeah.
What best describes what you do?
What I do? Okay. So I think that's a really good question for everybody to think about. And the way that I would approach it is I would say I am an inquisitive, thoughtful, opportunity-taking human being. And I know that sounds a bit like, what the fuck is he going on about? But it's kind of in response to what you said about wearing many different hats. One thing that I've seen, you know, throughout my life with friends, family members, and then as a coach with clients and things like that, is people give themselves labels and identities. Often it comes from their career. So I am a teacher, I am a firefighter, a hairdresser, whatever it may be. And because that is their identity, it often just massively limits their potential, what they believe they're allowed to do, allowed to say, how they're allowed to act. And for me, this is a massive thing. It doesn't matter how many like strings to your bow, whether you're a teacher, whether you're a parent, a husband, a wife, whatever. I think when you give yourself those kind of titles as your identity, you hold yourself back. So rather than saying, I'm a performer, I'm a presenter, I'm a podcaster, all the P's, I'm a penis, no, stop. you know, all these different kind of labels, I just go, fuck your labels, like, get rid of your labels. Mm. I'm a human being that is on this earth, that is inquisitive, that wants to learn, that wants to grow, that wants to take opportunity, that tries shit. Mm. And I think especially with this era that I'm now entering of, like, television and reality TV, you know, it's that thing of judging a book, by its cover. I think it's so easy to go, oh, reality TV stars, they're just people that are brain dead. Who would do something like that? They're stupid. And people have these opinions. And what I love at the time of recording this is there's been a show on E4 just finished recently called The Underdog Josh Must Win. Don't know if you're familiar with it. But what I really enjoyed about that is the whole premise of the show was to take the person least likely to win and try and put him in scenarios to best illustrate his strengths so that in the end, they vote him to win. Mm. And I think that's great for us all to reflect on in life, is not judging someone by, their first impressions. If he had have been judged by his first impressions, he'd have been voted out of the show. Mm. But because they manipulated things slightly and made it so that he was put in different environments to show his other strengths and thrive bit by bit, people went, there's so much more this guy has to offer, to the point where, spoiler alert, in the end, he wins the show on his own merits through a lot of it. Mm. And for me, that's not just me talking about me and how I describe myself, but I think for all of us, we've got to look at that and go, where are we writing people off? Where are we writing ourselves off? And in doing so, just limiting our potential. So for me, my advice to anybody is stop saying I am a, and then following it with a job title. That's why I do
something negative.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm stupid, me. Like, we're so negative to ourselves.
Yeah.
And I think have more open language of, I'm just a human being on this earth, really lucky to be here, trying shit.
Yeah.
Like, that'll,
you know,
do.
It sprung to mind when you were talking about that, Lewis Capaldi.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, he would have never have made it, would he? Because there were certain ingredients to being a star.
Pop star, yeah.
That he wasn't meeting.
Yeah.
But he's an absolute legend, isn't he? And everyone loves him. He's got an absolutely fantastic voice. So let him do what he needs to do.
Mm-hmm. Ed Sheeran is another one. He's not got that stereotypical look or personality. He's quite reserved. He's quite. And I love the way that there is a shift, I feel, happening. After being bombarded for years with social media and reality TV shows where it is all about your abs, your physique, your height, all these superficial things, there is now a need for people to go, I just want real. I want truth.
Yeah.
I'm not bothered about how you look. And I think that's important for everyone's mental health.
It's a tough, I'm just like relating to the limiting belief thing, what you're talking about. So I've got it down on my notes, mate. That's literally one thing I wanted to speak to you about, is limiting beliefs. And I really struggled with it from going through living in a particular environment when I was growing up,
yeah,
to going through the education process where you're hammered with limiting beliefs throughout that whole process, aren't
yeah.
you? And then no one's going to chip away at them things, but it's just you, innit? You're the only person that can kind of break these beliefs away.
Beliefs are at the heart of everything, mm. like, and to the point where we just don't realise how much we've been conditioned. Mm. There's something that Stephen Bartlett speaks about, which I think is excellent, which is we don't get to choose our beliefs. And initially I was like, yeah, we do. But what he said was, in terms of changing beliefs and all the rest of it, the example he gave is if a terrorist walked into a room right now and put a gun to the person you love the most head. I know this sounds a little bit like far-fetched and a little bit dramatic and stuff, so bear with me, apologies. Trigger warning. But if the gun was held to that person's head that you love the most and they turned around and they said to you, I'm going to pull the trigger unless you believe I'm Jesus Christ. Unless you believe I'm Jesus Christ. In that moment, at best, all you can do is lie. That's it. You could be like, yeah, I believe in Jesus. Still, fuck yeah, Jesus. Yeah, it's Jesus. But in your mind, you've not changed your belief. You still believe that person is Jesus Christ. If, however, the guy then turns some water into wine right in front of your eyes or starts walking across the sea, whatever Jesus did, sorry, I don't know. But whatever he did, if he starts doing that, suddenly he starts to go, oh, shit. Like, maybe this is a test from actual Jesus. Maybe this is Jesus. And the belief starts to change. And I think that's a really key thing. We've all been given these beliefs based on evidence, based on what other people have shown us or said is true, based on what the education system tells us, based on what society, cultural beliefs, all these beliefs have been given to us. And until we question them and then actively find counter evidence, we're never going to change it. So if all your life you've been told nobody from around here ever amounts for anything, you're a piece of shit, best you'll ever do is get a 9-to-5 job, earn minimum wage, if that's what you've been told and you've got evidence around you that supports that, it's not enough to just see Arnold Schwarzenegger say, you can be anything. Like, that's some guy in a different country on a video. You need to go out and stack counter evidence. And often we have to provide it for ourselves. Like, we've got to go, I don't know if I believe in myself yet, but I'm just going to take the action anyway.
Yeah.
When we started our podcast 2019, where was the evidence that we could do a podcast? Like, we're just two idiots from Bradford going, we're going to do a podcast.
And we got called out on that a few times.
Absolutely.
That's okay.
And we were pretty shit sometimes as well.
Yeah.
But we kept taking the action despite the belief. And guess what happens? The belief starts to change anyway. The results start to change. Lo and behold, we go and break a Guinness World Record, right?
Yeah.
That wasn't because we just had loads of belief. There was just a belief of, let's try it. If someone else has done it, we might be able to do it. And it's putting that emphasis on action. So I think anybody that's struggling with limiting beliefs, it's not enough to just talk about them. It's not enough to just look yourself in the mirror and be like, I am beautiful, I am amazing, I am talented. You have to go out and proactively create and find substantial counter evidence.
So what's the first step? If this is really lighting someone up now, what you're saying, what would you say is the first step that somebody would need to make? And then how does that then compound into a different belief system?
So I think first and foremost, identify what is it that's the main belief holding you back? Like, what is it? And usually you might need to go below the surface, because usually it's kind of like, oh, I'm not good enough. But about what specifically? Go a bit deeper. Or maybe you think, like, for me, a belief I found a year ago when it came to dating was, I kind of thought, oh, I'm confident now and I've done coaching, I'm doing well in business, I believe in myself. But actually, as I dug deeper, I'm like, you still don't feel deep down you're good enough for a girl. Like, you don't feel good enough. And I was like, shit, yeah, that is still there. That is still a limiting belief that's there. So the first thing is really identify the main...
sucks, mate. Really?
Yeah.
Changed.
Yeah, I've done a lot of... I'll do it. I've done a lot of work on it, including a new relationship course that's coming out that you can buy. Take you through... Thanks for that. Take you through the process on how I overcame it. Genuinely, I've done a lot of work on it. Yeah, 100%. And I wouldn't say it's 100% changed, but it's massively shifted. And that's the key. It's an ongoing process, I would say. So I think, yeah, get really clear on what that belief is, and then look at what is the supposed evidence that you think backs up that belief. And if you had to have that evidence in a court of law of absolute truth, what you'll often find, this is an exercise I take people through, you can't, the evidence isn't there. Like, I'm not good enough. Why? Well, because I got told I wasn't good enough at school. All right, does that mean you're never going to be good enough? Well, I guess not. It's that kind of thing, right? When you go deeper on it. So the first thing is intellectually recognizing that it's nonsense. And then the second piece is what I'm saying there about, and then what's the specific action you need to take to start to squash it? And usually, let's say, for example, someone's like, I have a limiting belief about public speaking or talking on a live or doing a podcast. Yeah, all right, let's work with you, Dan. Usually, what you've got to do is go, okay, so I'm nervous about that. I don't feel good enough about that. The next bit is go, I'm okay with being shit, right? Be at peace with being shit. Most people don't. They go, that's out of my comfort zone. I know it's not my strength. So they just avoid. But the next thing is coming to terms with actually failing and being shit is a necessary part of success. Yeah. So if you're not willing to lean into being shit, quote unquote failing, you'll never get good.
And it's not the end of the world.
Well, that's the mindset shift you've got to go. It's the opposite to the end of the world. It's necessary. Yeah. It's needed. So you've got to go, okay, the first time I talk on stage or on a podcast, whatever, I'll probably be shit. Second time, I'll probably be a little bit less shit. Third time, here we are. Still shit, no. But this is the thing, that if you are happy in that space and you don't put all the emphasis on what will people think, what are people going to say, and put it on everybody else, just put it on, how can I keep putting myself in this positive, uncomfortable scenario, learn, adapt, evolve as I go, And bit by bit, you might go from shit to all right, from all right to good, good to great, great to excellent. You've got to be okay with being shit.
When we did the event in January.
Yeah.
So I've watched a stand-up comedy with Bernie Mac. Bless him, Bernie Mac. He's not with us now, but funny guy, very funny guy. And I had his internal mantra in my mind just as about 2 minutes before I was about to get up. And what he did on a stand-up, where he got up and the first thing he said, where he went, I ain't scared of you motherfuckers.
Nah.
Everyone started laughing at him straight away, and he broke my eyes straight away.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, yeah, I'm not scared of you. I'm looking around at everyone, man. I'm not scared of you motherfuckers.
I should have said it.
It's so funny. And it helps.
It does, yeah. It helps. Changing that internal dialogue.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what? Bit of vulnerability here from me.
Yeah.
I'll be perfectly honest. That workshop, that day for your event.
Yeah.
I was poorly.
Yeah.
But I was also shit scared of getting up and public speaking.
Yeah.
And that were definitely a part of why I didn't get up that day.
That brought it, yeah.
Fair definitely. Point.
And that's 100%. The first step, going, right, okay, that's the reality, that's where I'm at now.
Yeah.
Or that's where I was at there.
Yeah.
What's the next step?
Yeah.
And it might be that going from a podcast to standing on a stage in front of 100 people's too big of a step.
Mm.
So what's a smaller step? And I think that's something you'll get it, especially with fitness clients. People try and take big leaps, and it's not always, you know, the right approach.
Mm.
Sometimes it's rather than going there, that let's see that as 10 steps and work backwards. What's the one small, simple step that's a bit easier?
Yeah.
And lean into that and build as you go. Mm. And you know, so for maybe for you it's talking in front of 10 people or going live on Fit or whatever.
Yeah.
And you build it up.
It's evidence, isn't it?
Yeah.
Confidence needs evidence.
Right.
Bang.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, I can speak in front of 10 people, they liked it, there's that I can work on, but I know for next time, okay, yeah. I feel a bit better now, I'll speak in front of 20.
Yeah.
And you build that up. And yeah. I think, again, that's a really good piece of advice that you kind of touching upon there for anybody listening. Just make it sustainable. The steps don't always need to be. We always think in such big ways. I'm going to be an author and be successful and all these, we get these massive goals. Just, that's great. And that is all possible, and it might be your destiny, but just what's the first step? Break it down.
Mm.
The biggest teacher for me is training. I've said it a few times. Everything comes back to that for me as a teacher, because
yep.
when it comes to progression, when it comes to loading, when it comes to excellence and execution and all those things about mastering certain skills and getting strong and various other things with training, it spills over into other areas. So I can always be okay with the fact that I'm not good at this right now, but I have faith that I am going to get better because of training.
Yeah. And I think with training, what is a great teacher is you can't cheat the process.
Yeah.
You can't take a massive leap forward. Your body won't do it. Progressive overload, right?
Yeah.
You've got to bit by bit. It's a slow process. Any fitness journey, strength building journey, it doesn't happen overnight, so it teaches you discipline, it teaches you patience, but it also teaches you that incremental progress rather than big leaps.
Mm.
And I think you're right, like it's a great way to approach anything in life.
Yeah,
that's good advice. I've got something written down here, and it were all about limiting beliefs.
Yeah.
So as we've been talking about it, I'm just gonna read this out. So it's so important to identify beliefs, because once you identify a negative belief, once you bring it into the light, you will see it doesn't belong to you. That it comes from your parents, it comes from your family, it came from your society, it came from your friends, and you bought into it. But it isn't yours. Holding on to something that isn't yours is called theft. Don't be a belief thief. Let go of what isn't yours.
Oh, beautiful. Who wrote that?
A chap called Bashar. Nice. So thanks for that, Bashar.
Yeah.
That just really hit me in the feels when I saw that.
And there's kind of a coaching exercise I take people through, which is like, now you've recognised it's false and it's not truth and it's not yours. Mm-hmm. Then the exercise is to then go, what's a new empowering belief? But I personally coach it a little bit different. I say, rather than calling it a new empowering belief, what's the truth?
Mm.
That's it.
Yeah.
Let's just focus on the actual truth.
Yeah.
There's a phrase that I love. I can't remember who actually said the quote, but it's as human beings, we are designed to get better through effort.
Mm.
Like, just take a moment to say that in our design, our makeup. Like, if you work hard at something, you actually improve at it, right?
It's a feedback loop.
And I think in terms of the truth, if you're struggling to find empowering beliefs, as we call them, the truth is you are human, I believe, unless there's dogs, cats, fishes listening to this. You're a human being. And by design, you are genetically created with a design that means if you work at something, if you put effort in something, you will get better. Mm. What an incredible gift that is, that we've all got that design about us. Mm. And I think just that one truth alone can help to get rid of and banish loads of limiting beliefs.
Mm. Nice.
But is that also called having a growth mindset? Because if you've got the fixed mindset,
yeah,
then you don't believe that the progress is going to help you. Mm. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess so. But ultimately, regardless of the mindset, it's about recognizing the truth, right? Mm-hmm. And you can have a mixed, a fixed mindset. But once you're provided with that as evidence, like, you know, if you work at something, like the biggest athletes in the world, whatever, they didn't just born brilliant and they're brilliant. They work at it and they work at it and they get better and they get better and better. Yeah. That's just the truth. Mm. But yeah, I love that. To your point, I love it. Yeah, fixed mindset. You're always going to focus on the negatives. There's something about pessimists, right? And statistically, pessimists will be right more often than optimists. Why? Because they set a low standard.
Yeah.
And guess what? They act in accordance and alignment with that low standard. They get it right.
Yeah.
Optimists go, do you know what? Everything's against me. Everything's tough. Everything's shit. But I still believe in the fact that I'm designed to get better through effort. This is just part of my journey. I keep going forward. Mm. It means they have more failures. It means they have more times where they go, oh, I thought this was going to work. It didn't work. But guess what? They have a much higher level of success because they have that growth mindset, that optimism. So you can be pessimistic if your ego needs to be right all the time and have a low quality of life. Or you can have that growth mindset, that optimistic viewpoint, matched with the action, the effort, the energy, and you're going to have a higher quality of life.
Yeah.
Where do you struggle? And so it seems like, obviously, when we speak,
yeah,
and I know you as you know, as long as we've known each other. I think I were 9 when you were born. So throughout that time, I've seen you grow into a boy, a man, a successful person. And for anyone who's listening would think, Jesus Christ, like, this guy's got it all figured out.
Yeah.
Where's your struggle?
I would say struggle happens every single day. Struggle to be motivated. Struggle to be positive. I struggle still. As I said, there's been a shift in beliefs massively, but I still struggle with dating. Like, I'm going on a date next Wednesday, and I'm like, oh God, I'm so scared. Like, I still have those feelings. I actually think for a lot of people that are into personal development and a lot of people that become coaches and things like that, it's often from a place initially of not feeling good enough, you know, insecurity and ultimately struggle. So what that tells me is I'm not born naturally as a super optimistic person. I'm not born naturally as a super motivated person. I'm born with somebody who really found that challenging and a struggle, and that doesn't go away. What happens is there's a willingness to work at it, and it's effort. And it's effort for me every single day. I have daily rituals that most of the time I don't want to do. Like, I also struggle with being consistent. As much as I understand from a psychology standpoint, like, all the tools and everything that are going to help me, doesn't mean I get it right all the time. I think I've struggled a lot of my life with identity as well. I've struggled with, like, just really owning who I am, warts and all, and being okay with that.
True.
I feel, yeah, like, I'm a bit of a, like, I adapt and I'll try and adapt who I am to please everybody else in the room rather than just go, no, I don't agree with that. And I think more than ever,
I think your career's played a part in that.
Right, yeah. Because from being 8, I was doing performing arts, which is very judgmental, very much fit into this box, very much dog eat dog. So, and also very much based on external validation. Like, if a casting director says, well done, you feel amazing. If the audience applaud you, you feel amazing.
Yeah.
So 100%, you know, I've thought about this a lot. But I think the main message I want to give people is, if somebody's painting the picture on social media that they've got their shit figured out and that they've got the beautiful family, the beautiful home, the beautiful body, the beautiful life, my suggestion is that's probably a really untrustworthy person.
Yeah.
Because none of us have all of that. Those people that are seemingly doing great have their own challenges and struggles usually daily. Mm-hmm. It's just they've worked at how to overcome them quicker and manage them better, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would, that's where I would say I'm at. My list of struggles and failures is way higher and longer than successes.
But that's what success is.
Right. And that's the reframe.
Yeah.
That's the reframe that people have to get. And again, there's a bit of like, when people hear that, like, yeah, I kind of get it, but get fucking happy with failing and struggling. But equally, get help, get support, get around other people that rather than just bitch, moan, whine and complain about the struggle, they look to positively reframe it. They look for opportunities. They support each other. They hold each other accountable. So we've all got struggles, but who are you around? Are you asking for help? Are you, you know, having the courage to ask for help, which often is a big thing for people. Because I speak about my shit all the time. I ask for people for help all the time. And that's why I'm seemingly, in some people's eyes, doing all right.
So I'm going to go back to 2018, right?
Okay.
And we were both at a pretty low ebb in life.
Yep.
Life were getting the better of both of us at the same time. And the only
time where I felt like
I were getting a win in the day were when we spent time together.
Yeah.
Because it were switching up the mindset and exploring other ideas and opportunities and all those sorts of things. Talking about, you know, the bitching and the whining and the environment and the negativity and all that. And I felt like I were flooded with it.
Yep.
So we started our podcast, which is still going, by the way.
Yeah,
you took the reins and you continued, and that came from a place of I'm sick of this shit, and we need to do something about it, and we need to connect with higher vibers, more positive people, more educated people that are better than us in a lot of different areas. We need to get around them, speak to them for us on a self-discovery path, but also why don't we just help others while we're doing it and come and listen. And that's what we did. And from that, then that turned into an insane amount of growth, I think, for both of us in terms of what we believed and perceived that we could achieve. And then we went on at the end of the year to break a Guinness World Record. Can you explain what did we do, number one? And then number two, has that impacted your life today? Still from doing that?
So in terms of answering the first part, to keep it really, really simple, I think the first thing we did is have each other. So that's aligning yourself with somebody who you can chat things through with in a non-judgmental, but equally in a challenging way. So it wasn't like, why do you want to do that? What? It was like, okay, let me hear more. Well, you know, that's the first step in our conversation, is we don't just immediately jump in and go, that's shit. But then we challenge it. So we had that person that was on a similar vibe that could challenge each other, listen to each other, and then hold each other accountable, which is what we did, right? With that, we then took massive specific action. We didn't just sit around talking about talking and then talk a bit more and then talk some more. As we talk, we acted on it. We then evaluated. Then we acted on it some more, talk. And that's the process. And I think the final piece on it is we weren't afraid to put ourselves out there and be judged and have different viewpoints challenge us, but equally not be held back by that. Learn from it, listen to it, but don't take it all on. And because I think that's where a lot of people go wrong. So if it was to try and kind of break it down, that's ultimately what we did. You know, when we started the podcast, it was just an idea. And then we were like, rather than just go, oh, let's just ask Jill from the chip shop round the corner if she'll come on, because we really like Jill and she's easy to chat to. We were like, who's some people that have done something pretty significant, like that take massive courage, that are out of the ordinary, you know, top end athletes, TV actors and things like that. And it's like, well, most of them will probably say no, because who are we? And we haven't got a platform, we don't have an audience. But let's ask them anyway. And guess what? If you ask 200 of them, like we did, one or two might say yes, like they did. So it was that thing of just take that massive specific action. Don't take action based on the level you're at. Take it based on where you want to go and just give it a try.
Yeah.
And it's just a numbers game then. And we got a couple of yeses, which means we've now elevated our platform, which now gives us that confidence, the feedback loop again you referred to, to ask bigger guests and go again and go again. And as you say, 12 months of doing that, we go, right, we've gone for a year. We've been number 21 in the overall podcast charts. We've been on BBC One talking about our podcast. We've had some huge names on our podcast. It's been a year of this. What do we do to take it up a level? And we're like, let's try and do something no one in the world's ever done and break a Guinness World Record. And we did it. So it's that constant, when you take those 3 points of, you know, having someone, being accountable and putting yourself out there, and then you have that constant feedback loop of massive specific action, evaluate, massive specific, on and on, that's where the progress and the growth happens. And you can see anyone in the world that's achieved anything, and on some level, you'll be able to trace it back to those same fundamentals usually.
Yeah. Specifically, to talk about the Guinness World Record, how has that helped you?
I've learnt that I can go without sleep for 3 days.
Tell us about it, lads, yeah.
So yeah, it was 53 hours we did, which was longest live audio stream, which basically we was doing this, chatting on a podcast for 53 hours, various guests coming and going, which obviously is a massive mental resilience game. And yeah, it taught me about what I'm capable of. It also gave me that extra strength and confidence to help other people, because it's similar to what you've referred to before in training. Quite often you go, oh, I can't do that. It's like, just take the first step, keep going and take it one step at a time. And I think that's a really good example, you know, when we broke that record, of that, like, you can't think of the 53 hours. You've just got to think of this hour, right? What do we need this hour? And you take it one step at a time. And I think that as a mindset, as an attitude, as a skill set, again, is something that's transferred into every area of your life.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'd imagine it, well, it's similar to like running a marathon, isn't it?
I don't know. I've never done it. I don't desire to do it, so please don't get me doing that one.
I've not done what you guys have done, but I've done two marathons.
Amazing, right?
And,
okay.
And I'm just relating because when you said...
It's a mind journey, isn't it?
Yeah. You don't want to think of the finish line. You want to think about, let's get these next couple of steps in.
Yeah.
And that's where your mind goes in that moment, because you literally can't see that.
You finish can't, it's too it? Far. It's too
you're
big.
Surviving.
You're surviving. And also your reason why. Right?
The why.
Why am I doing it?
Yes. Yeah.
That's a big one. When shit hits the fan, that is a big one to always come back to.
And for us, we're raising money in memory of your mum, right, as
exactly.
well.
So do you think I was going to let her down? Absolutely not.
A chance.
Not a chance.
No.
And I was struggling. I was struggling at 24 hours. I thought, wow, it was 7 a.m., I went to the toilet. I'd been talking all day and all night, and we weren't even halfway. And I sat on the toilet because we had a very brief timed break, didn't we? So you go to the toilet, you do what you need to do, and then that's it.
You've been adjudicated on your piss length.
Yeah. And I was like, this is tough. And I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to get through this. And I had that moment because I'm not even halfway yet and I'm struggling now. Yeah. What am I going to be like?
Yeah.
It's like, calm yourself down. Mm. Keep going. It's okay. Mm. And that's all you've got to keep coming back to. And if you're really struggling when you've got the why, that's what gets you over the line every time.
What you often find as well, I got to that mark and I thought I could keep going further now.
Once we got there,
I recently set myself the challenge of doing a 24-hour fast. I did 37 hours.
Nice.
And the reason I say that is it's often worse than we think in our head. We make it a bigger deal.
Yeah.
And actually the human body is so capable and can go so much longer than our mind tells us 100%. It can. And I think the same with marathon, the same with breaking that world record, the same with doing this fast. You get to, you can talk yourself out of it way before it's done. And actually, if you just take that approach you're saying, you get there and you actually can go, actually, this isn't as bad as I thought. I'm here now and I can keep going. Mm. So it's the lesson there is to really recognise the power of your thoughts.
Mm.
You know, that what's going on up here, what you're telling yourself will massively dictate what you actually go on to do.
Mm. I had it this morning in my class. One of the girls were putting a weight on her back that she's not used to. And she put the bar on her back, and as soon as she elevated herself to take the load. She shook her head. Mm-hmm. She didn't say anything.
But you know what she's thinking.
And I went, stop that right now.
Let's see the puppy dog.
There's nothing in here.
I went, stop it right now. Take a breath. Engage your car and drive.
Great.
She did.
Yeah. Beautiful.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, don't talk yourself out of it now, will you? If you're going to talk yourself out of it, don't even start.
Mm. You've said it to me before. Like, if you're going to step up to that bar, you better believe you're going to lift.
Yeah. Love that.
Yeah.
And that's the power of a good coach. Mm. It's not just do X amount reps and then let's chat about Coronation Street while you're doing it. It's like, and well, but you see people around the gym doing that. You see these PTs very clearly not interested in being there. It was just a career path of like, I'm naturally quite fit. I like sport. I've not made it as an athlete. I'll be a PT. Yeah. And now I'm training people that don't inspire me and I'm just going through the motions. I see it. I see it on the gym floor. And the difference then between a coach that really understands the psychology of humans, not just the physical science of what they need to lift and how much protein they need and macro counting, the mindset is the difference that will make the difference every time.
Correct.
So that's what you bring to the table, I would say, massively, is you have got the science and all that great stuff, but more importantly, in my opinion, you understand the power of thoughts and you're there to just give that little tweak and go, hang on a minute, lift that motherfucker.
It counts for so much more.
Yeah.
It's your perception of, and that will spill over into absolutely everything.
Everything, yeah.
That's where Dan stands out, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. I was talking about you this morning, actually, in the gym with my dad. And I said, I don't even know why. I think I was talking about a new book I was reading. And I said, like, I'm really lucky that my introduction, I mean, my mum and dad have been great as well, as you know, they're health conscious people.
Yeah.
But my introduction really to training and that side of it was you in my early teens. And luckily I didn't just get a PT that is just very much like, low carbs, more protein, lift heavier. Like, you know, and it was very much about equipping me with critical thinking and do your own research, try stuff. There's no one size fits all when it comes to health, when it comes to goals, when it comes to your physique. You know, you've got to go on your own journey and it's a jigsaw puzzle, as you refer to it, and you've got to find your pieces that fit that jigsaw puzzle. Mm. From a very young age, that was, you know, I'm grateful to you. You equipped me with that. And what works for me doesn't work for many people.
Mm.
And I also am wary of that when I give my advice. Just because it works for me doesn't mean it'll work for you. The main piece is go and figure it out for yourself. Try stuff.
I think that's the thing about influencers that are out there preaching a particular message that's very one size fits all. It's this is the way and this is the only way. And you can't do that. You can't do that. Like, it has to be backed by science.
It's an immediate red flag, I think, again, just giving the listeners advice in terms of what to look for. The minute that it's very much like, this is what you need to do, the only thing you need to do is unfollow them. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's that simple. If that's what they're saying, if it's a little bit more nuanced, like what we're talking about here, then they're probably along, you know, the right sort of lines.
Yeah. Let's go there then, because I know that you've had your struggles as well, figuring this out, your jigsaw.
Yep.
And you had to go on your own journey. Let's talk a little bit about bodybuilding and your experience of that, the good, the bad and the ugly.
There's not a lot of good.
Okay.
Bodybuilding's bad and ugly, in my opinion.
I disagree.
For me, so competing bodybuilding, I feel like the goal, you know, let's do what I've just said you should do, which is, you are right, let's find the positives. I think it's giving you a focus. It is building confidence. There's a bit of a art to posing. I get that, you know, and there's some great posing coaches out there. But for me, the reason I say it's predominantly just bad and ugly is because the main goal is based on how you look. And what I saw in my experience competing is whatever means necessary. Starving myself, you know, eating disorders, steroids, didn't matter to people that I came into contact with. Whatever means necessary, we'll do it because I need to look a certain way. And I think not only is that really unhealthy for your body, doing that, starving yourself, you know, eating disorders, things like bulimia, and steroids, even though, you know, that's not good for your body. What does that tell you about someone's mindset? That they will do whatever they need to look a certain way, not be healthy, not make sure they can have children and, you know, have loving relationships, and they find they're a lot of their purpose, the sense of their identity, a lot of their sense of fulfillment comes from doing things that are unhealthy. Why is that any better than someone who drinks excessive alcohol? Like, for me, it's not necessarily much better. It's a similar category, in my opinion. And I often found from just analysing it that when I was digging deep on why are people doing this, it's a massive insecurity, chip on the shoulder, not feeling good enough. And I would say, for me, competing might be step one of proving to yourself you can do something. That's okay maybe for some people, but then it's like, what's step two? And what most of them do is go, I'll do another competition and get bigger. I'll do another competition and get bigger. And it's an endless cycle fueled by insecurity, fueled by pain. And I think the next step is going, okay, where did that insecurity come from? Why did I think getting bigger biceps would solve that problem? Why did I think putting steroids into my body would solve that problem? That's the next step. Most bodybuilders in my experience don't do that.
A lot of it is a facade. On the flip side of it, not all bodybuilding is unhealthy. There's a large proportion of my training currently, and always has been, will come down to functional bodybuilding.
I think it's clear. We need to be clear to define that.
Into health.
Yeah.
Because it helps to regulate your body weight, your insulin levels, your hormone levels are in a more optimal place, your bone density, your strength, your movement patterns. But not all bodybuilding does that either. I'm talking about functional bodybuilding, not...
Well, let's just define it by...
weight press machine.
When I'm responding to you, I'm talking about competing as a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Whereas what you're saying, if I'm understanding correctly, is just the idea of...
training.
Yes, basically the training.
And that's the thing that I wanted to offer there in this conversation. Like, this is where it can flow. Like, there's a massive part of bodybuilding that is okay.
Yeah.
It is healthy.
Yeah.
As long as you're not smashing in steroids, have low self-esteem.
Yeah.
And some work on yourself.
100%. Yeah. Let me make that clear, because maybe I wasn't. Like, I still do bodybuilding in the sense that I go to the gym and I lift weights.
Yeah.
And I have goals within that. But also I end up with loads of injuries from lifting too heavy and all the rest of it that I still have ongoing today. And it's like, so now I just train in an entirely different way. It's not always going, can I lift heavier? Can I be stronger? It's more just... resistance training is good for health, then there's lots of health benefits. It doesn't need to be this competitive streak necessarily that I think when you are competing, it's all about. And so my sort of thoughts on it that I've just shared there are about specifically not only just doing a competition, but going back and doing more competitions and more competitions. That's where I just think generally, from my experience, it's a bad place to be.
I think from what you're saying there, Matt, is like the first process is good. You know, you actually build external muscle as well as learning internally as well.
Mm.
But then instead of going that next step to build even further external, that's when you go back inside yourself and learn that way.
I completely agree. And I think it's the same as if you're putting yourself worth on money or business success as well. When does it stop?
Yeah.
And the answer is it doesn't. You'll always want more. So the next step is rather than always striving for more, go internally. Do the inner work so that you can be at peace without more. And then if you do go on to get more, you're not doing it from a place of not being enough, not worthy, not good enough, or insecurity. You're doing it from the opposite, which is, I know I'm enough. I'm doing the inner work. And actually, I've got loads of potential. So I'm just going to do stuff from a place of, why not see where I can go with this? Not because I need to, not because I'm insecure.
Mm.
And it's a really complex part, is that we're touching on. Mm. It's a really important part.
Mm.
I think it's overall growth. When you look at it, it's not linear. A lot of people have this expectation, and I think social media has a part to play in this, is that when somebody shows a transformation, I did this in 12 weeks. This is a video of me 1 year ago, and this is me today. People go, fuck yeah, I want a bit of that. And they want it now.
Yeah.
Like right now, it's like, no, you've got to live this day by day. And also the process of getting to that place is not linear. You've got to take a few back steps. You've got to go do some therapy. you got to go walk on a treadmill instead of sprint everywhere. Like, I don't know, you know what I mean? There's a lots of different ebbing and flowing, peaks and troughs. But overall, if you keep going, there will be progress and there will be gain, as long as you've got faith in that. Do you know what I mean?
1,000,000%. Because it's what next? You achieve that goal, what next? And if you've done it the wrong way, and I think this is a really big thing for people to think about, there's a quote that I heard, which is, the slow way is the fast way. Yes. Right? There is no fast way, because anything that you do cutting corners means at some point there'll be a trade-off where you have to now take a step back. So it's like fitness, if you compare it to like winning the lottery, if you don't know how to make that money and invest that money and you've not learned the skill set, we know, we hear about it reported, a high percent of people that win the lottery lose it all.
Yeah.
It's the same with fitness. If you've not learned the sustainable approach that got you that result, you're going to lose it again. If you do that 12 weeks for Ibiza, beach body look, you go to Ibiza, you come back fat as fuck, been there, got the t-shirt, right? Extra large. But it's because the attitude's wrong. You're trying to look for cutting corners, fast ways. And I think the sooner you recognize that all you're doing in choosing fast routes forward is slowing down your overall progress, that's when everything can start to change. The slow way is the fast way.
Nice. Love that one. Love that.
I've noticed that you're flying the Immerse Recovery flag high and
proud.
Getting in your ice bath and showcasing that very, very consistently.
Got a cut there.
Oh,
right.
Zoom in on that one.
Because I'd moved my bath slightly too close to the wall and I got in all excited. And so, yeah, be careful is my advice.
Be careful.
How does cold water therapy help you?
So I love it. It's a mental challenge every single day. You know, nobody ever goes, I can't wait to be freezing cold. Like, in my garden when it's already cold. Like, nobody does that. If you do, you're a little bit weird. That's fine. We're all wonderful and weird in our own ways. So I love the fact that it's a mental challenge, and it's when you challenge yourself mentally, there is that sense of pride that comes from that. And so it's a great way to build confidence, to get that little win. You're like, come on, I did that. I did something I didn't want to do.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of that. So that's a massive benefit. The other benefit is that it just makes you so present. I really enjoy that experience of just for 3 to 4 minutes a day, being in the garden, seeing the birds tweeting, fresh air, and just feeling alive.
Yeah.
It's that aliveness that I feel with cold water therapy. And you come out and you're like, we're ready to go. It's like, I don't quite feel as switched on or as sharp on the days that I don't do it. And I like that it's short burst. Like, that's very much something, you know, bringing my own self-awareness into it. I do like things where you can apply yourself intense, but it's not like non-stop, there's a stop. Just that 4 minutes and we're done. And then you can move on to the next thing. So for me, it ticks a lot of boxes. I believe there's a lot of health benefits, you know, that are going to help you with like your immune system and stuff like that. So that's just like brilliant to know that as well. But I'm a massive fan of it. And again, different things work for different people. But for me, it absolutely works.
The interesting thing for me is when we ask people this question, Dan, often the first response is about how it helps mentally. There's so much science around how it helps physically in what it can do. But, and me personally talking as well, it's mostly for my mental strength to keep, like you say, getting that little win in the morning, beating them fucking voices in your head.
Yeah.
Don't get in there.
Yeah, yeah.
In there.
Because we've all got that voice.
Not today.
Not today, mate.
Oh, you've done 3 already.
Yeah.
Don't do it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Game.
I'm going to prove it to myself that I can do this regardless.
It's great, isn't it?
And it's learning that skill, as we were referring to earlier. It's learning that skill to act in spite of those thoughts. And then those thoughts, then feelings change. That's kind of a phrase that I say a lot of times to people I work with. Most people act how they feel. So if they feel tired, they act tired. They talk tired. If they feel demotivated, they act demotivated. Small percent of people that gain success act tough feel. That's the difference. So I feel tired. I feel demotivated. What actions do I need to take to change those thoughts and feelings?
Yeah.
And cold water therapy is a great example where you can feel like you don't want to, like you're tired, not today, those negative thoughts, but you just plunge yourself in regardless, and guess what? Your thoughts and feelings change within 2 to 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And I think the powerful thing about that for me is when you start in your day that way, it's just going to compound all the other decisions that you're making, i.e. your nutrition, how much water you're going to drink. I think the world is chronically dehydrated.
Yep.
And I speak to about a lot this a lot with a lot of different people.
Yeah.
Even athletes, you know, don't get enough water. And it's just the little things, you know. And doing something like that that's very intense that you don't want to do, and once you've done it, you're like, and you're sharp and you're ready to go. I just think that just compounds every other decision that you're going to make for the rest of the day.
Agreed.
So, you know, that's why it's been a big game changer for me. I mean, I always kind of, I got that anyway, and I got that through training and through disciplining, but it just sort of elevates it to a different level.
And that's the thing, the more you can find different ways of getting that, because we're all human and our emotions change hour by hour, minute by minute. So the more that you can have little tools in your toolkit to go, right, that brings me back to the present. That gets my cognitive function better. For me, training, fasting is one that I personally utilize, cold water therapy, and also just going out on a walk and getting steps in the fresh air. They're four great things that I know for me keep me sharp, keep me focused, keep me feeling good ultimately.
Mm. Love it. Matt, I want to touch on the word personal development.
And it's two words.
Sorry. the phrase.
Yeah.
Obviously, at the core of it is a lot of very empowering benefits and teachings within that. It's become, there's been a few charlatans, shall we say, in that space, the space that you're involved in.
Yeah.
And it's got, it's kind of like, you've got a lot of avenues into personal development. Like for me, when I kind of delved in, it were financial personal development. That's how I got in. I wanted to teach myself how to create a business or how to budget. Jess, thanks for that. You were part of that as well. Taught me how to budget my money. Yeah. But
she also addressed you out here.
She
is your life coach, basically. Yeah, she sorts everything out. She didn't bleach your hair, did
she? Behind every great man.
Did she bleach your hair?
No, I did that myself.
Yeah, I can tell.
I want a bad decision.
I'm kidding.
No. But what I'm trying to say is there's a lot of different avenues in personal development. Mine was through finance, and then it naturally evolved into, right, now I've taught myself this, what's next? Fucking hell, this is awesome. Where was the in for you into personal development?
The in for me was about, it came from not feeling good enough, generally, across the board, in relationships, whether that be intimate relationships, family relationships, friendships, finances. I started a business when I was 19, at the age of 27, still didn't really have any money, and was just always reinvesting.
Yeah,
and I'm like, when the fuck am I going to start making money, do you know?
Yeah.
My physical fitness, I would just constantly yo-yo. So for me, it was across the board. I was like, I've got so much potential, I've got enthusiasm, but something's holding me back. And I think strongly that, you know, do we need to call it personal development? I think ultimately working on your mind. That's what, for me, what personal development is. It's working on your thoughts, your feelings, your belief system.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. And that, in my opinion, is the core to everything. It's the core root of how good your relationships are, your finances, your friendships, so on. It's everything. We spoke about it with training, mindset. I was like, that's what makes the difference with a coach. It's not just telling you what to eat, speaking you through it. The core of everything is mindset. Now, when it comes to charlatans and what you touched upon there, which I completely agree with, and life coaching and that kind of the industry of life coaching is very much unregulated. You know, you don't have to train for 6 years to call yourself a life coach. There's some terrible certificates that you can do in 10 hours on your own without anybody even seeing you. I've done multiple qualifications, including classroom stuff in person for days and things like that. But, you know, it is unregulated. And what that does is mean you're going to get both sides of it. You're going to get people that want to take advantage and see it as a quick way to make money that can talk the talk, but don't necessarily have the experience, the awareness, the empathy to be able to help everybody. But the flip side is, you know, we all know, I'm sure we can think of examples, or we can be open to the fact that there will be examples of that most highest qualified doctor in the world that still has bad intentions and that still, you know, is maybe got lazy or complacent or whatever. You can think of that with therapists, personal trainers. We were just joking about it earlier. I see these personal trainers that don't want to be there. So I think the other thing to offer is there's no one size fits all. Life coaching will work for some people. Therapy will work for other people. There's many different things. But what I would say is do your due diligence. Get as much testimonials and you know, as much advice as you can before you make a decision. But don't limit yourself to decisions based on hearsay or other people's experiences, or indeed because you've had a shit coach. I've had multiple therapists that just weren't for me. I didn't quit on therapy. I then found a therapist that was pretty good. I've had multiple coaches. I've had a coach that was a charlatan. Didn't mean I'm now going to slag off life coaching. I've had personal trainers that don't come up to standard of what Dan does by anywhere near. Doesn't mean I give up on personal training. And I think that's a really key point. Like, whatever the industry, whatever the qualification, it's not necessarily that's the most key factor. Who are they as a person? What are their values? Have they got integrity? Are they good at what they do? So I think that's a really important thing for people to take on board when they talk about life coaching. It's so easy to see stuff as black and white. Life coaching, shit, therapy's great. Is it? Is that true?
Such a broad thing.
Because that's how we think as humans. We like to think in black and white because it's easier to think like that. The truth is there's nuance to everything and it's way more complex. Nothing is black and white, or very little is black and white. So that's what I would just say then in response to the part about the charlatans and not writing it off, finding the right people. And I guess another red flag we touched upon earlier is that thing of, if a coach says everything's amazing, they've got all their shit together and they can make you be amazing too, they're probably trying shit.
Yeah, nice. So you talked about the moment when you realised that you needed personal development, yeah? When you said that...
There's many moments.
Many more.
Still have it most days. I need more personal development.
Yeah. So I'm kind of thinking of my moment when I first kind of discovered, like, a light bulb, sort of. And I remember it really profoundly now, like... I stumbled on, it were an audiobook, and it was called something like The Millionaire Next Door, right? And the little punchline underneath was like, 50 years of experience talking to 200 different millionaires on how they've succeeded. And then there was something in my mind that just went, so I can listen to this right now.
I've got access to that. What? Yeah.
Because I always just used to think books were in Harry Potter 1 to 7.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Good ones though, aren't they?
Great books.
Yeah.
Different outcomes.
Yeah.
And then that was like my light bulb. So then there's multiple books where you can have a fast track, essentially. There's never a fast track to anything. But you can learn from 50 years of experience in something that you're interested in. And that can be anything, you know. When I first started my window cleaning business, I read a book called How to Start Your Window Cleaning Business.
Literally the title?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
By someone who had a successful window cleaning business.
Yeah, great.
So it's like knowing that them tools are there.
Yeah.
Like, what were did you lean on any sort of them tools when you got first in?
Yeah, I remember it was a similar thing. I was struggling in business, probably about 24, something like that, around the time. And it was... I just saw a book by Duncan Bannatyne, and I just knew he was a guy on Dragon's Den. He must know about business.
Yeah. What's it called now?
There was something about Change Your Life, I think. I can't remember the title, but that was the start of just going, oh yeah, exactly what you're saying there. There's access to information here for a couple of quid that is from a guy that's got all this experience in the area I want to be more successful in. And then it was actually, I think I bought a couple of his books. And then I stumbled across a podcast, which was Lewis Howes' The School of Greatness, which very much is what I model Success School on now, my podcast, which I kind of think of it as like the UK version of like getting out there and, you know, speaking about these subjects that we didn't really get taught in school, that if we do know about them, they're going to help us live those happier, healthier and more fulfilling lives. But that first podcast, it was actually on sleep, how to optimize sleep and have better quality and all the importance of sleep and how
Sean Stevens.
Yeah. On School of Greatness. Yeah. It was the first podcast.
I listened to that.
And it was brilliant. And then I was going on holiday.
It was very tangible advice as well.
Yeah, it was. Good. Like evening routines and things like getting magnesium spray, and there was so much in it. And also that it's not necessarily the length of sleep, it's about the quality of sleep and the four stages of sleep. There was just so much. I was like, oh my God, why do we not know all of this?
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'll listen to the next one. And the next one that I stumbled across, same podcast, was Eric Thomas, motivational speaker. And I just always remember it was 2014, I think, something like that, roughly. I went on holiday for 10 days in Mexico and I just consumed all these podcasts, and it just opened my mind, like what you're saying there, that there is a world of opportunity. And as the years go by, there's more and more opportunity at our fingertips. I think the problem for a lot of people now is there's too much information,
yeah,
to the point where they don't know what to follow, what to work on next, who to listen to. Mm-hmm. So one thing I would say to people is, you know, slow down. Don't try and learn everything all at once. Like, I'll often say, like, what's the thing that if you could just make some progress in that one area that can act as a catalyst to every other area starting to be improved?
Yeah.
So if for you right now, you're absolutely skint and you've been like that for a long time and you don't know how to make, manage, multiply money, like, maybe that's the thing to just put your focus. Yeah. If you're massively obese and you're having loads of health problems, maybe it's your physical fitness. If your relationships are dog shit and you fall out with everybody, maybe some self-work and working on relationships. But I would always say, like, just pick one thing initially. Don't try and get advice from 50 people. Maybe listen to a handful, and then the one you resonate with that works for you, maybe go a bit deeper on that person. Because we are living in an abundance of access to information, knowledge, support, free stuff, cheap stuff, expensive stuff, everything in between is at our fingertips. Mm. Anybody listening to this now, if you are able to listen to a podcast, you have access to everything you could ever need. The problem is people get overwhelmed and people are like, I don't know where to start. That person's saying that thing. That person's saying something slightly different. Who do I listen to?
Yeah.
People get overwhelmed. So I would just say you've got to strip it back. The information's there, but it's the approach to consuming it that's key.
That's right. You can actually become like a junkie on it, can't you?
And I guess we've all probably fallen into that category at some point.
100%, 100%.
I call it shelf development. Just more and more books being added to the shelf, but no change actually happening.
Yeah.
And there's still a time and place for that. You're still listening, you're still observing. That's not necessarily a derogatory thing. It's still a positive action if you're reading and listening. But the self-development comes from take action on what you've read. And if you're reading loads of stuff, you go, what do I take action on? Oh, I don't know, I'll just read another book.
Yeah, I'll consume a bit more.
Right. Yeah. Which again, I'm saying that from a place of I've been there and done it, not to mock people, if that makes sense.
I have as well.
Yeah.
We are all guilty of that.
Yeah.
We all are.
And still sometimes now I have a business idea and I learn about that, and then I have another idea and I learn about that. And then I'm actually just learning about three business ideas and I'm not doing anything with any of them. You know, I still do that from time to time because there is an excitement around learning something new and thinking, could I do that?
Yeah.
So it's about self-awareness again, to recognize when that's happening, stop, realign, what's my intention right now? What's the goal? Right, now what do I need to focus on?
Yeah.
I think that's very hard for the younger generation to get their head around.
Oh, man, born with an iPad in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what are we doing? You know, it's very dangerous, and it's something that I speak about with my two a lot. And, you know, Poppy just came to me the other day and she asked me if she could go on Instagram. And she's 12 in a couple of weeks. And I'm like, why? And she said, because my friends are on. And I said, oh, sweetheart, right, okay, let's have a conversation about this. But then she was with her friends. And I said, okay, let's park this conversation. Let's talk later. So then I had to go there and I'm like, we're talking about the implications of Instagram and all, you know, other social media platforms to a 12-year-old. It's madness.
Bonkers.
It's madness. Like, and it's really hard to navigate and through it. my kids do have social media.
Mm-hmm.
They do get caught up in the consumption, you know, washing machine.
Yeah.
Like we all do, but and I don't want to deprive them of that completely. But it's a very hard thing to manage, and it's something we all need to be aware of.
Yeah.
Especially as parents.
Yeah. I mean, that's a massive, massive challenge for parents to navigate. And I think one thing that I remember we spoke about right on episode one of our podcast was use the internet, don't let it use you. Mm. And I think it's a fine line. And what I would say is the other side to social media and the internet is there's so much opportunity for young people that didn't exist. You know, it is true that you get teenagers becoming multimillionaires through TikTok. Like, that's not made up. It happens. And with the right combination of talent, timing, managing it effectively and support, it's a lot of moving parts, shall we say. But there is so much incredible opportunity that can set kids up for life.
Mm.
So managing that fine line.
That kind of growth, accelerated growth at such a young age can be damaging as well.
Of course it can. It can be.
It breeds so much negativity, I think.
Yeah, it can do. And I think that's the key. There is no definitive answer. And I think the scary part is we're still in such early stages of knowing what the implications of screen exposure and, you know, the mental health aspects. We're still just starting on this journey of social media and the kids, you know, because when we were growing up, it wasn't around when we were kids. So we're really on the first few generations that are experiencing that, and the long-term implications we'll know in 80 years or whatever, you know? So we just don't know the answers is the honest truth. We know that there's a lot of damage being done through people needing validation and likes and keeping up with the Joneses, but that always existed, right? It just used to be on your street rather than comparing to everyone in the world. Mm. So it's a really tough thing to manage. I think it's just about, again, doing your best with it, innit? And that's all we can do is do our best, educate, let them know of the pluses and the negative side and supporting them through it as best as you can. Because if they're living in the Western world right now, you can't shield them from social media until they're 30 or whatever. You know, so it's about how do we introduce it in a way that's positive as best as possible, make them aware of the negatives, I guess. But again, easier said than done. I'm not a parent and I don't envy that job. It's tough.
Well, there ain't a one size fits all there either.
There's no manual
that comes with it, and it is tough because they're different individuals.
Correct. Yeah, completely. You know?
So,
do you want children, Matt?
100%. Yeah, I really do.
You'd be a great dad.
I'd like to think so. Yeah, I would love to be.
Yeah, best thing ever, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah,
best thing ever. It is.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I hear like people like yourselves talk about it, like it's a love like no other, and it changes your life, and I can totally appreciate and imagine how it would, and I feel like that is part of my next steps.
Yeah.
Can't say next step. I think the next step is find a suitable partner.
Maybe.
So let's go there.
Oh, shit.
So let's go there. So,
we're going to be
quite unlucky in love, let's say.
Yeah.
Is it because you like maniacs?
No, I think it would be a bit disrespectful to call them all maniacs.
And I'm joking.
I don't know, you're joking. I think societally and culturally, it's harder than it's ever been to find and keep love. Spoke recently to Paul Brunson from he's a relationship expert. He has been on the Diary of CEO. He speaks. He's one of the experts on Married at First Sight, and the data shows and suggests it is harder than it's ever been in any time in recorded history to find and keep love.
Wow.
There's many different reasons to that. But I do think there's, you know, when you go back 100 years or so, the dynamics between males and females and their roles that they played in society has drastically changed. And I think that's a massive thing. What we talk about there, the rise of social media and reality TV and things like that, and the people's perception of dating has massively changed.
Mm.
You know, the whole thing of like, if there's a couple of things you don't absolutely love at that about that person, rather than work on it, there's another three options there. Go and date them and swap and change. There's a lot of that that we're seeing from a young age and we're being exposed to. So I think there's a lot of things that mean it's just a really hard time when it comes to dating. There's also that thing of when we're younger, we all make silly mistakes. You know, for me, my biggest thing was not putting enough attention on working on myself and my own part that I played in a relationship. I was just always really ambitious.
Mm.
I wasn't present like I needed to be for that other person. So there's a lot of self-accountability that I reflect on and that I take. And ultimately, for the girls I've been with and they've dated, some of them did some stupid shit as well. And that's just the cards we were dealt. It's a combination of stuff, right?
Mm.
But I'm still hopeful. And I think that's key. I still believe in love. I still believe in finding that other person, building a life together, having children. I still believe in it. I'm still open to it. And at the same time, I'm really focused on not rushing it. Mm. And not having that thing of, oh, you're 33 now, like shit, you got, I'm just like, man, just flow, just be, keep working on yourself, be open, put yourself out there.
Yeah.
And don't, I think that's a really key point.
Yeah.
Not putting pressure on it.
There's a really nice quote about creating a beautiful garden and not letting the butterfly come to you and not trying to catch the butterfly.
Yeah.
And the butterfly will come to the most beautiful garden.
Right. So clean your bush up, is that what you're saying?
Tidy your bush.
Trim your bush.
Yeah.
And I came here today. I'll swear grave for my link.
So anyone else? Has anyone that come in?
Yeah. I love that though.
Yeah.
Like, joking aside, I think that's so true. And there's another part on that I reflected on recently from talking to one of my good friends about, because what we're referring to there is do the self work, you know, heal past traumas, work on behavioural patterns. But the other side to that I think is really important to touch upon is you can then never feel ready for that person because there's always work to be done. We can always improve. We can always be better.
Mm.
So then people are always like, I'm not ready to put myself out there yet. I've still more work to do.
Mm.
So I think the other thing to be mindful of is the self-work is always an ongoing journey and it can be something you do as a couple and you grow together. It's 100%. Not a case of you have to be your absolute best before you meet that person.
Mm.
And that's something I'm mindful of as well, is not being too like, oh, there's still stuff I want to do. Life's messy.
Mm.
The journey's messy. There is no perfect route. Just be open, give it your best, and learn as you go.
Yeah.
So then love triangle comes about.
Oh. Yep.
What were the thought there?
Why the fuck did you do that?
Did you believe that something positive were going to come out of that in terms of a relationship?
I was open to it, 100%. You know, to be clear, I was sent a message on Instagram by one of the casting team saying, we think this might be right for you. Would you be interested in it? It wasn't something I went looking for. It was an opportunity that came to me. And I was kind of like, okay, let's go. And my thought process on it was, I'm all right with most areas of my life. I'm quite happy with my businesses, my friendships, I feel I've got good balance. My health and fitness is better than it's ever been. I'm happy with my following. I've got an amazing online community and a membership with people who really love what I'm about. You know, I don't need fame and I don't need fortune. I'm on a path where I'm going to just keep growing each year anyway. So I think it's really important, and not everyone will believe this, and that's cool too, but I wasn't going on there for the clout and for the TV. Don't get me wrong, now I've done it, it's an opportunity that I'm going to maximise as best as I can. But in the time, that wasn't the main driving focus. For me, something that I preach is put yourself out of your comfort zone.
Mm.
And the areas where you struggle the most and you feel most vulnerable, they're probably the areas to really lean into. Mm. So the idea of going on a dating show was terrifying for me, like really bloody scary. Putting myself out there, being vulnerable, knowing it's the one area I struggle with the most and I'm going to do it publicly was a massive challenge. But I also thought, look, by what they're telling me, and I think this is something I want to make clear. We weren't told the show we were going into was called Love Triangle. We were told it was called Love Match, but working titles subject to change. So we were told,
sneaky buggers.
And it was very much like, don't worry, this isn't going to be Love Island style, where it's all kind of, you know, a bit more superficial perhaps. We were told it's very much, we're trying, it's an experiment a social experiment to see, can we, by getting the right match together, you and another person that on paper you're a good match, if you immediately have to live together, what will be the implications of that? Will it mean it speeds up the dating process, or will it be something else? So for me, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get an expert. Listen to me about what I'm looking for in a woman, and you're going to try and find a perfect match, and we're going to get to immediately live together. Yeah, I was kind of like, maybe I was naive, but I was kind of like, this is a real opportunity. Like, I'd pay to get an expert to do that. Like, not the moving in bit, that's a bit weird. But I would pay to sit down with an expert and say, this is exactly what I'm looking for. This is what I bring to the table. This is what I'd want from a relationship. And then go out across the UK and find me someone that I'm matched with. So yeah, I was really hopeful. And I was of the mindset that this could work. I know it's reality TV and I need to be cautious and aware. I wasn't stupid about it. But I was absolutely not going into this with the driving force of let's just, like I know we hear a lot of people say, they're not doing Love Island for love, they're doing it for the clout. That was not my reason for doing it.
Mm. And overall, to reflect on your experience, tell us about that.
One of the hardest things I've done. It was, I think one of the things you lose the context of when you just switch on the telly and watch Big Brother, Married at First Sight, whatever, you lose the context of it's a whole month of your life where every single day you've got people you've never met before interviewing you, filming you, putting you in challenging situations where you've got no access to the people who know you and love you and that know what you've been through in the past. You don't speak to your family, you don't speak to your friends, you don't have the internet. Like, you are completely immersed in this artificial world that has got a narrative that is being given to you. Every single day, you don't know what's going to happen next, what twist they're going to give you, what you're going to be filming, what position you're going to be put into. The crew and the team that I work with were lovely and, you know, some really great people. And we had access to welfare, we had access to psychotherapists that we could speak to at any time. And in that regard, that was brilliant. But actually, when you're in that process and you've no contact to your loved ones and your family and the normal world, and it's all consuming, and the TV crew can't tell you what the next surprise is going to be because that's part of what you've signed up to. Psychotherapist doesn't know what it is. They've purposely not told them. The only thing you need to sometimes help you with that anxiety of what's next, what are we going to do, is just someone go, here's the next few steps. And you're like, okay, I can process that and think about it. But you don't get that. So with the best welfare in the world, it's still a really challenging emotional roller coaster. So I found it really tough. I found at times I didn't know what to say. I was quite quiet, which is not like me. I was quite shy at times, vulnerable at times, struggled at times, fucked up at times, definitely.
How?
Well, I think I fucked up by maybe being a bit naive to it all, taking people on face value.
We're both guilty of that, aren't we?
Yeah. I think I also self-medicated because we didn't have friends, family, because we didn't have the internet, social media. Like, my thing was I was bit by bit drinking every night. And that's not me. I never drink at
strange,
home.
Strange that you say that.
That's one way to cloud up the judgment, isn't it?
Well, mechanism,
isn't it?
I mean, predominantly I was drinking like after we finished filming. It wasn't like drinking loads on camera. But that was a coping mechanism. I had nothing. Like, and when things are challenging and uncertain and you can't be given that certainty, you go, well, how do I self-medicate this to get through it? So that wasn't the best of things to do, I would say. But overall, I can honestly say now, regardless of the edit and what people think, regardless of external noise, for me, being honest with myself, I am really proud of myself. And it was hard, and I did it, and I was myself, which means I'm not perfect. But I fucking pushed myself. I was open, I was vulnerable, I was open to find love. And I'm proud of that.
Nice. Well done. Well done. I guess with that as well, what you've just touched on there, it probably makes you understand the mindset of people that do lean into alcohol more and end up in a bit of a rut with things because they might have grown up with uncertainty and
completely
and all that sort of thing. And you can probably see how a vulnerable mindset can lean into that sort of thing and how drastic things can change.
Completely. Mm. I've got no judgment, you know, to anybody. I think we're all different and there's many factors. In terms of just our natural personality type, some of us are a little bit more just like take things as they come, a little bit more straight down the line. My dad, you know my dad, he's very, there's no major highs and lows with him as a person. That's his natural default setting is just to be logical, methodical, figure stuff out. Not everybody's like that. And then you add on to that their conditioning, their background, all these factors. I think, these subjects of addiction and things like that are really, really complex. And it's really important coming back to kind of what we spoke about initially, not judging people on face value, understanding, listening, and then trying to find what's the best routes of support. And yeah, it's tough because if that person doesn't want to help themselves, there's very little you can do. But then it's going, well, how can we maybe help them get to a place where they do want to help themselves? Give them a reason to change. Give them a reason to live again if they're feeling like there's no purpose to their life. You know, it's a process. But I think it needs to start with empathy and understanding and intrigue of why. Where does this stem from? Not judgment. And that can be hard for people.
Yeah. Yeah. We're coming close to the end.
Of life. I mean, we all are, I guess.
Yeah. We're all logging.
It's all perspective, right? Yeah.
Yeah, often.
Yeah.
We never know. This is something, and this is a question that we asked on our podcast and that you continue to ask at the end of the podcast, but I want to ask this to you. What is your definition of success?
Peace. Combined with fulfillment. And that is something I think about a lot. It's something that might change. But when I really dug deep, like, why do we want to achieve? Because, look, the dictionary definition of success is basically achieving a goal that you've set. That's it.
Mm.
But, you know, what we imply. And
then what?
And the idea is, yeah, the idea is that, you know, really, quote unquote, success, just achieving goals. And for me, why do we achieve goals? Why do we strive to achieve goals? And on some level, it's about how it's going to make us feel. So then when I go a step further, I'm like, do you know what? To be truthfully at peace with who I am, at peace with my past, peace with my present, excited for the future, like be at peace with my flaws, be at peace with other people's judgment, whether it be positive, negative, indifferent, be at peace with that. Just be at peace. You're successful. If you can be at peace when it's challenging and it's tough, equally, if you can be at peace when things are going good and not be so like, it's not going to stay like this. How do I keep, like, just be at peace. And finding that feeling of peace and fulfillment at any point in your life, if you can really feel that, for me, for my personal definition of success, I'm successful.
Beautiful.
Nicely put, man.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed that.
Yeah. Al,
what's next for you, mate, please? I want to know what's next for you.
I'm going to have my dinner. Starving. do you know what? Just really open. I feel really blessed. I feel really lucky. I think I've strived and strived most of my life to be successful, quote unquote, like, you know, achieve goals. And now I'm just at a place where there's loads of stuff I still want to do because I'm excited. Mm. You know, I'm looking for a house right now. I'd love to meet a girl. I'm going on a date next week. I'll let you know how it goes, boys.
Fingers crossed, buddy.
Like, yeah. There's more impact that I want to make. I love what I do from a coaching perspective. I love doing the podcasting and meeting great people and, you know, questioning things and then, you know, getting lessons out of that you can share. Mm-hmm. There's so much that I want to do, but it's kind of like I don't need to do any of it either.
Mm.
I just need to be at peace, be grateful for what I've already got, be open, and just keep moving forward. So I would say that's where I am right now.
Yeah.
I think at the heart of us as human beings, we all want love and connection. And if on some level every day I'm getting love and connection, I'm connecting with you guys right now, we're sharing stories, we're sharing lessons, we're learning about each other. In whatever format that is, whether it be more TV, which I'd love to do, whether it be my podcast, my community, my coaching, or something else, as long as I'm ticking those boxes, then I'm happy. Mm. And I'd say that's what's next for me. More of the same.
Awesome, Matt. From a personal point of view, obviously, you guys did the podcast before. I had my own podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, previously.
Yeah.
And Dan joined me. I didn't know you at that point.
Yeah.
But just want to say I've got to know you over the last 12 months or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just love your energy. I think you're a beautiful human being. And the impact that you're making and the intentions that you have with people is very pure. And I can feel that. And
bless you, man. Thank you.
I just want to say, keep doing your thing.
Shall we kiss?
I think we should.
But I also want to put that back at you guys. Obviously, I've known Dan all my life, but the partnership you guys have got, and again, it all stems from a lot of what we spoke about today. It's about what someone's intentions, you know, who are they at the heart? And it is so evident in both of you. And I said this to you on the phone the other day, didn't I? Like, you're just genuinely a good guy. Like, you are good guys. And I think, I know you've got many ups and downs, many challenges in business, many things where things don't go to plan. And there's times where you just want to fuck it all off, as we all do, right? But because at the heart of you, you are good people with good intentions and the work ethic, it's just a matter of time before things get bigger and better and bigger and better. And I think to anybody listening, like, keep supporting you guys. You need support. You know, it's that thing of strength in numbers, team. Nobody, there's no such thing as self-made success. It doesn't exist. And you've got all the right qualities and attributes, but it's not enough doing it on your own. You need support. And whether that be people just sharing this podcast and telling other people to listen, whether it be sharing what you're doing with Immerse, with the cold water therapy products, like, understand that these two guys are absolutely the real deal, but that ain't enough. They need help. They need support. We all do. So I'm here supporting, and anything I can do, you know the score. But I just want to say to people, like, again, because they can listen, but it's different being in person. Keep supporting you guys, because it's brilliant and it's needed.
Yeah.
Where can you find me? Find me on all the usual social media. Main place I am is Instagram at Matt Hall Official. Podcast is Success School. Give it a check. Check it out. It's on YouTube and Spotify and Apple and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, come and connect.